Hey, howdy, Scotty.
Good, man. How are you?
You good?
Yeah.
Nice. We have an interesting guest today.
We do.
A teacher and a creator. Mevrou Botha, hoe gaan dit?
So I need a bit of let you in on a bit of context here. So, like we chatted online, we've kind of crossed each other in worlds, I think, before, but we haven't actually physically met or even met in this sort of sense. But I know Rick quite well, Metarik, who actually, you know, I was talking to him about the Rain Dance Immersive Awards that are coming up this weekend. And I was looking around to do specifically something on other, because I know, and a lot of people don't know this, is that there's actually numerous South Africans in the XR space that are making splashes in the international scene. And I've always wanted to tap into that a little bit closer. So Rick did actually mention you to me. I looked through the credentials within the shows that are within competition at the Rain Dance this year. I didn't pick up your name, and I didn't. I think the bigger project that you're working on wasn't specifically South African, so I didn't pick up that you were actually there as well. But he did point out to me, so here we are. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Yeah.
No, great. Metarik is fantastic. I mean, I also didn't know, because I've been in the space for now 6 years in the live VR performance space. And when we were in Rain Dance with previous projects, and it was also at the closing ceremony or the award ceremony, and there's this cohort of South African people who have built this amazing world.
Yeah.
And that's where I also reacted. Yeah. We have some amazing South African talent, like in the XR space. So yeah, it's really exciting. And Meta Rick himself is extraordinary. He does really.
Yeah, he does.
All right, Miranda.
So, yeah, the show I'm involved with this year is Symbiosis Dysbiosis. So I'm a performer in the show, but it's a global team. But the creator and producers are in Toronto, Canada.
So Miranda, if you I recently just saw your profile online, from voice acting to storytelling, VR and XR. Can you just briefly just give us your background, where you come from in this industry, and what you're currently working on?
Sure. So I'm an actor. I train traditionally, like for stage, and I'm a voiceover artist. I've been doing that for 25 years. I'm a puppeteer. So I trained here in South Africa. I moved abroad, well, to London, and I lived there and worked there as a voice artist and puppeteer for 8 years. I came back to South Africa. I fell into tertiary education. I did that for 14 and a half years. Now, 6.5 years ago, just before COVID, I was studying my master's degree in English, and I've always liked technology and was curious about technology, even though I come from the non-techie side of things, right? I come from the performance side, but I've always loved technology. So as part of my research, I was looking at how storytelling is challenging because of technology, and specifically VR, virtual reality. So I found this gentleman online, Jason Moore, who was in those times, he was in High Fidelity, was doing a live show in High Fidelity. And then I reached out to him and I asked, can I interview him and do some of my research on his next project, which was a show called Alien Rescue. And I met up with him in High Fidelity and then also auditioned for the show. And then I got to work with him. He's based in New York. And we did that show for 6 years, which is called Alien Rescue. And it's a live cinema VR theater show that we did over 100 performances of. So that's how I got into the whole virtual reality. I also didn't know it was this thing. And when I read an article on Jason Moore, and I was just, this is astounding. This is amazing. So I was really lucky to get involved with him. And then about through Alien Rescue, I got to work with a different director called Tosca Taran, who is in Canada, Toronto, Canada. And She has decades worth of experience working with fungi, and she's an installation artist and a digital artist and just doing extraordinary things. And then she invited me last year to join her show Symbiosis, Dysbiosis as a performer. And that's the show that's in Rain Dance this year, and it is nominated as the best musical theater.
Nice. So Rain Dance is what you're currently working on now?
Rain Dance is the festival.
Yeah.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit about it. When you said you did your MA in storytelling and VR, or at least your thesis was in that space, I didn't actually realize you could do that, which is, you know, I'm kind of interested in that as well. So maybe tell us a little more about, you know, your approaches to narrative within VR space, and why, you know, the differences you might have faced in getting involved with that, in terms of your approach to storytelling. Because there's something about, you know, admittedly, I've stepped around in the VR space a fair amount, and I admittedly, live theater isn't. I don't know too much about it. Like it's a weird space to me, and I'm kind of like, okay, how does this work? You know, the live aspect to a production within VR. You know, the mechanics are a little bit differently. So maybe just give us a little bit of a breakdown in terms of how you feel. You know, that space, how you, you know, the differences you make in your own process there.
So I say to people, VR, and especially I think here in South Africa, it's very much done in niche, but even abroad, I think VR is still developing, and we're hoping it will go mainstream for various reasons. It's not yet, but live virtual reality is a niche within that niche, right? So even though, and we talk about this in our community of, and there's several companies and individuals who are doing live performances in VR. But outside of that community, it is very much not well known, right? So it is thriving in the sense that, like, Rain Dance is in its 10th year of existence. But yeah, outside the circles that we move it, even within the VR community, if you're not aware of it, then yeah, you're often given that you don't know about it. It is to a large extent the same as theater, right? From a performance background perspective, and from a dramaturg background, it is so very similar. It's just the access points is we're now putting this brick in your head. If you need, depending on what type of show it is, you might need to be tethered to a beefy computer. Other shows you don't, right? You just need the standalone headset. No, there are shows where they do it via desktop. But the actual experience itself, from the creation process and also the performance process, I should be careful now, the performance process is very, very similar to traditional theater, right? Once we are in a space, like the VR platform of your choice, whether it's VR chat or where shows I've been involved with this in Resonate, or the other shows on Meta Horizon as well, once you are in your chosen spot, your chosen theater, we're all in the same room, and the director and the developers, the technical people, we all can, and especially for Resonate, like, we work together in the same space, and things can happen in real time. They can create something in a director and go, well, no, I don't like it, or move it that way, or whatever, or in the blocking as we proceed through our rehearsals, and you know, they might say, I know we need a rock here for you to hide behind, then they go, sure, they create it quickly and they move it there. So okay, not that you can do that in live theater, but you can move things around on stage, right? And so in that regard, it's similar. It's so very similar, right? How it is different in the creation process, it's in that way similar to cinema, that the script needs to, well, the shows I've worked on, the script takes precedent. So, and that takes months to develop between the director and the writer or writers. Once they are happy with maybe the first or second draft, then maybe the actors will come in for a table read. And that again is then similar because we get into VR and we, you know, everyone's locked in from home, got a PDF in the world in your hand, and you're reading it and getting some feedback. That's the one side. But before we could actually put it on its feet, the whole world needs to be created. So that, so it's basically the script creation, then the world creation, and that can take months, many, many months, right? Depending on the scope of the project, right? So with the Meta Movie project I've worked and I'm still working on, that's the process he takes. Like it's a long iteration. With Tosca's process, she did many different variants and develops into what it is now, right? So there was many occurrences of it being a live installation and then moving into VR and having both and all that. And people are forgiven to, even within the VR space, say, what exactly is this? Because even us who are working in it, we fight about, is it theater? Is it cinema? Is it gaming? Because it's taking bits from all of that, right? So there's lots of interactivity, and even for our Twitch streams. So sometimes we stream the shows live, and we've worked on that to try and get interactivity even for people who are watching it live, so that they can, through Twitch commands, give some type of actions for us that we can hear or see somehow in world, and then we act on that.
Can I ask just a... Yeah, thanks. I just want to ask a somewhat technical question. It might not be the right, may not be a question that you can answer, but when you're deciding what world to work in, whether it's ResNet or whether it's VR chat, what are you involved in that decision, and why would you decide one platform or another?
That would be very direct and project specific, and so the director produces a choice, right? It's a personal choice. I know many, many devs work and VR devs work in Unity the game engine?
Unreal.
It's a personal choice, right? I know that both of the directors I work with, they love ResNet because you can literally, you don't have to create a build. Like you do in Unity, load it and get feedback, then have to again go and work on that project for weeks or days or weeks or months, and then get upload it, get feedback again. In ResNet, everything is done in world, and you can share assets as well between people. You can literally hold something in your hand that is saved in your computer, hand it to someone else. The moment they have it in their hand, they can serve it to their computer.
Nice.
Right? And there's also the just immediacy of building together. They can literally be in the same space, build things, and get immediate feedback. Because I think it's that communication loop that is much shorter in ResNet that I think is one of the main reasons that the
interesting platform.
But yeah, I'm not the most technical person to be able to answer this. It's much more robust things that these platforms can do. And each one, there's such a big community in VR chat and so many other platforms. There's so many other platforms, and each they have their community of people who love it. So I think it's very subjective. People choose what they choose.
And what's the reaction been like to the work that you do in VR compared to looking at your transition from being an actor, moving from acting into the VR world? The same performance that you would do in a normal setting versus in VR, what's the reaction like there? Is it, do you find people have enjoyed the performance as much as they would when you would perform in theater versus as you would in a created world, that is?
Still two different mediums, right?
Yeah.
It's similar in many ways, but traditional theater, even immersive theater, when they try and pull the audience within the space where the actors perform their world, there's still a separation in a way, where with virtual reality theater, they are in the world with you, and the world is all consuming in the sense that it's you are 6 degrees of freedom, and you are completely immersed, right? So in a sense, we've had such great feedback of our shows with people, especially during COVID, because we actually started right before COVID. I mean, I met Jason in 2019, but during COVID, it was such a powerful thing for people to come and join us in world and experience the show. This is now Alien Rescue. We had mostly really, really excellent feedback, in the sense that it is completely immersive, and that they don't feel that there's a separation between, but it's also the type of show we did, right? It was a lot of improv, and also there was lots that the actual players, so being the paying guest audience, but they're not an audience, they're part of the show, right? So they can, to say it's a choose your own adventure story would really not be doing it justice, because they really create the story as they move on, and we just like steer them where we would like them to go, but they have a lot of freedom. So, and through that agency that the audience has, they absolutely enjoyed it.
Here, interesting. Yeah.
Problems with motion sickness and I think that's the other thing is people's gear to be able to have strong enough and stable internet and have strong enough computers, because some people think you can do the shows that I'm involved with on desktop mode on just a laptop, but then you still need to have sort of a beefy laptop.
So you'd say,
so I think those were the more negative things, were more technical aspects of, and sometimes maybe too long. It's not everyone is used to having that warm brick on their head for an hour and a half, you know. It can get, you know, if you're not used to being in VR. Many people said they feel like they found, or they've been playing a game with their best friend, right? That's feedback like that. That's been amazing.
So can I ask how it's picking up for you? Like, is it something that you're seeing as it's growing? I mean, I've, from the last couple of years that I've kind of noticed it there, it's definitely been a growing phenomenon in my sort of consumption of VR, I should say. I mean, I haven't really delved into Two Punch myself, but I see it there as something that's growing. There's definitely community been building up around it. For yourself in the space, do you see it? Are you looking at this as like a career move? I mean, is there enough going on that you can actually move in full time?
So the short answer is there is enough going on, in the sense there's loads of productions and people and new people wanting to come in and do live reads and then get productions going. So it's really, it's thriving, but it's really building up and building momentum. But it's not yet at the stage where it's financially viable, right? Just to be honest about it. There's not yet, and we're trying, eh? But the return on investment, at the moment, you can't have a theater full of people in one instance in VR. I know there are some music shows and things that have 80 people in it or whatever. So you are always looking at that. How many people can we get in and pay? And also the idea of paying a ticket to do this is still, it's still so new, right? So it's actually very early days. But we are trying. We're trying different models, different ticketing prices to see what works. I have an idea of what I think we need to do. And that is, I think from now, we're going to have to collaborate with movie theaters, because we've done it in the past a few times where usually a company, they just rent out a theater for their staff or their people, and they have it as a year-end function. And some of the staff will go in with us with VR headsets, and then we stream the show for the rest live. And they can also, we might have someone in their audience that can do Twitch stream commands for us. So then there's still that live interaction in the auditorium for them. But then you can have more people, more butts in the seats, right, that can play. So in that sense, I think for now, but that's completely my personal opinion, I think that is a way to get some kind of return on investment where you can make it financially work. But the short answer is yes. I love doing this, and it's for a living. That is amazing. But obviously, yeah, it's a.
Comparing theater experience and like a world or a virtual experience in terms of performance, the way you explained it so beautifully, in VR, when you're fully immersed, it's almost like you're at a theater performance. However, you have access to backstage, because you almost get that when you have access to backstage in theater, you have access to the role players and the entire play at large. So in the virtual world, it almost sounds like it also gives you that pinnacle of an experience, because even though you're not backstage, there's not necessarily a backstage, but you have access to the actors almost in real time. Then my question is, if done right, can VR worlds in terms of performance outdo theater?
No, coming from a theater background, so I don't think that happened. I would like them to. I'm a purist in the sense that the power of theater is truly astounding, and I don't think that will ever die.
Okay.
So, no, I don't think VR theater will overtake theater, I think it's two streams that can exist, and they can even coexist if we can. Can make that work, right? That is just a different way of consuming live entertainment. I don't think that at the moment theater itself, depending on in which country you are, I mean, it is alive and well in South Africa. It could do much better, right? But it also depends on the audience going to see it. But VR theater is still very new, right? But once it gets to the stage where we have paying audiences like a lot, and it's really this return on investment, I don't see it. I don't see it overtaking theater. No, I think it'll be two streams alongside each other. You'll have a preference, right? It's similar to a preference for a paper book that you want to read, or you want to read on your device.
Can I ask you something about discoverability? So, unless you're kind of plugged into the scene, your accessibility here, there's two aspects here. One is accessibility. Like if you wanted to, I'm using the example, I don't know if you're familiar with another South African, Michael Balkan, who did Soda World. He was doing his events there, and he found like what he was doing there in that space in live events is a little bit different than what you're talking about, sure. But in the sense of an audience capture, he found like he was big in Japan for some reason. So you got access to a whole other sort of group of individuals who might not otherwise have access to what you're doing. But one thing I'm thinking about in terms of what you did and what you did last night, I watched your Twitch stream of your event. But that's not common, right? Like if I try and look at what other live performances have been going on in within the VR space, it's often not recorded, or at least I'm not finding them very easily. So there's one aspect there in terms of like, well, how are you maybe approaching your longevity in terms of what you're doing? Because, and this is something that goes across the XR experiences. Often you have a really great experience that's shown at a festival or something like that, and then that's it. You can't find it again. It's not on a particular platform. And this is where I say, like, I really miss, you're familiar with Within, that platform that's now no longer exists. It used to have really a collection of really good productions from around the world. It didn't come from a particular house, didn't come from Meta, didn't come from, another producer or Tribeca or something like that. It was, there was an access point. And I would like to see the same thing happen within live, at least a recording of what you guys do. I don't know what your thoughts on there, how you're thinking about maybe, creating like a longer arm to what you guys are doing at the moment.
Yeah. I know that there's lots of talk about that. I know it in Venice, I think last year, they had this big roundtable discussion about that. And I think it's really important, right, to archive things.
Yeah.
But the nature, and I fully support that, because there's so many amazing productions. And not just live theater, also, like you said, other forms of gaming worlds and just worlds that you can explore. That's sort of a once-off, and then people move on. So we really do need to archive and actually have it as not just a museum, but something that you can go and visit again. So I know there are more than one initiative trying to start doing that. The nature of live theatre is though just that, right? You have to catch it live. Right. So traditional theater, those companies and productions move from festival to festival, right? And from theater to theater, and that's how you get to see it. And that is the nature of live entertainment, right? So at the moment, we are doing similar things. We are moving festival to festival, wherever we're not chasing festivals. But here and there, we are really excited if we can get into that festival, whatever. But other than that, I mean, it takes so long to get to the point of performance. We do record some. I mean, I know for Alien Rescue, we record many of our live performances. But for me, that is still just a recording of a performance, right? It's not the actual live. And it will be different each recording. It is because it's live, right? The Twitch stream thing, we don't do that as often, Again, because it's VR, even if you watch it live, it's two-dimensional, right? So the magic of VR, live VR theater, is to be with us there in the space. Oh. Right? So I don't really have an answer for you in the sense of this is how we're going to do it, because I don't know. It's I think it's a problem that exists for the whole immersive theater community. How will we create a whole industry for this where we can move or have it more accessible, right? And also the thing about accessible for audiences who are not who doesn't have access to the gear, right? For us here in Africa, it's a huge thing, right? That's why I'm saying I think the movie theater collaboration is the way to go for now. Because we have our mobile phones, but again, it's just looking at the at least in the movie theater, it's just a bigger screen. It's two dimensional, but, at least you get the sense of interactivity if you are but you put someone in the audience, can do the Twitch streams or something, or have some kind of communication with the in-world players. That could give a level of interactivity to the paying audience members, but if they are just happy, as so many people are, that's why movies work as well, as they want to be passive, they want to sit and just watch, right? I think that's the way to go for now, until we can maybe have much cheaper headsets, right? We're talking about for our here in Africa, I do believe we really need to have, you know, you gave me your questions beforehand, I was thinking we really need companies to create headsets in Africa. We need much, much cheaper and, of course, stable, strong internet. But accessibility is a problem, and it's the hardware that's the problem at the moment. Yeah. But I mean, that's also global. I'm saying VR itself is still a niche. It's not every person abroad that has a VR headset. Definitely not.
Yeah. I think I asked this question to Deacon, what was his name again?
Dale
Deacon. And it was around the inclusivity of the technology in that's VR, to say, if you're looking for the ultimate experience, should there be a price to it? Say, for example, if you want the best sports car, there's no way we can say we will make an inclusive Ferrari. Ferrari will always be a Ferrari. And if you fancy yourself that kind of ultimate sports performance in a car, you would go for the likes of Lambo, Ferrari, and. Excuse me. Should the same logic apply to the greatest or the best immersive experience in VR, to say you're going to need goggles, you're going to need stable internet, then you'll be rewarded with the best experience?
I make that argument. Absolutely. I mean, you can go further and say you have to have full body tracking and haptic suits and all of that as well. I mean, that would be the ultimate. And you can work that into the activity, into the show, right? That you can literally feel things vibrate and pulse and whatever. There is an argument to be made for that. I just feel that if we can give broader access, then we can tell more stories, right? And more of our stories. But you could definitely make that argument. So, well, no, it's premium. It's if you want a premium experience, and you pay a premium price. But it's so early. It would be lovely if we could try and gain access there, for a broader community.
Yeah. Is there anything you can say about, you know, to other South Africans watching this? You know, like I said, I mean, South Africans are already, in my view, within my little bubble I live in, are maybe overly represented within the XR space. I mean, there's a lot of people involved here that no one locally even really knows about. You know what I mean? They're doing really impressive work, whether it's world building productions. You know, there's even Ulrico and the XR Habitat thing doing really interesting work in conservation, which is within the XR, under the XR umbrella. Anyone that wants to get involved in the XR space, or maybe in your particular area, live theater, how would they go about it? Who would they reach out to?
So you have to start going to, you know, firstly, you will need to have access to these platforms. You have to go into VR chat, join the Discord, join Resonite. I mean, I'm trying not to be biased about Resonite because that's my platform of choice, but go into your platform of choice in VR, in the sense, at least join their Discords so that you can see what is happening, because they are thriving communities online, and you need to somewhere have an access or a communication point with them, right? So we communicate on Discords. Most of these live theater companies have some kind of Discord server that you can join. And most of the platforms will market those servers. So get involved in that way that you can just see what is happening, and then try and attend some of these shows. Or like me, I mean, I read an article that someone else, that's why I love journalists, because if they don't write about what other people are doing, then other people won't find those people, right? So read up about the industry, just Google it and read, you know, and then reach out to people. I've never been afraid of reaching out to people and saying, hi, I'm this, and I'd like to know more about this. The worst they can do is ignore you, you know.
Yeah.
Reach out to people and explore.
I'm cracking away when you say you gotta love journalists. Scott is here brushing his shoulders to say at least somebody sees the work we do.
I mean, my journey started when I read an article about this director in New York. If I never got to read an article, it didn't exist. I would never I could try someone else, but he's like the OG of that industry. So, I want to talk.
This might be a bit too technical, but if you can, please just walk me through what would it take to have this episode in the world?
What would it take
to have this conversation that we're having right now, this episode of the Angle Podcast, created in a virtual world?
So you would need access to a strong computer, if you can, and headset that's either tethered or not. You can, with something like a Leather Quest, you can get into Resonite. We can have, the moment you can gain access to the platform, then we can do an interview, because you could stream or record the interview with a streaming service. I don't want to name names, but like OBS, you can record the interview. I know Dale also, he and Metalrick as well, I think he did it recently now for Rain Dance, that they stream live from VR and then they just project that onto a Zoom. That can also, I've never done that, but I know my current director Tosca, she mentioned that is totally possible. We could just stream into
correct. Yeah.
So okay.
But you would need to gain access to the VR platform. So for that, you at the very least need a strong internet connection and a strong-ish computer. If you have a headset, that'd be much better.
Oh, nice. So I guess next time we have this conversation, it will be in a world. Oh, cool.
So what else do we see? What else are you working on after this Rain Dance thing and this particular project? What else are you working on?
So the Symbiosis Dysbiosis project is continuing. It is going to SeaGraph and South by Southwest. So SeaGraph is in Vancouver and South by Southwest is in Sydney. We're still looking at funding, whether I'm going to join them in person or just here from my home in Cape Town. And so I'm doing that show, but I'm also involved in another show, but I can't say anything about that yet. There is going to be an announcement about that this week, I believe, on the socials. So I'm very much still involved as a performer in live theater. So that's my, yeah, my two shows at the moment.
Fantastic.
All right, cool.
Well, I think that's it from our side. Thanks so much for joining us, Marinda. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah, this is lovely. Thank you so much for your interest. We always jump on the opportunities to.
Sure, and
thank you
good
so
luck.
Much, man.
Good luck for the nomination. Hopefully, I mean, we're actually chatting to. I know you're in competition with. With Metaric, so some tough competition there, but yeah, good luck to it.
Best of luck, Marinda.
Cheers.
Enjoy. Cheers.